final exit. Faye, if you'd like to just come forward so they can see who you are. And Faye will be doing a presentation this afternoon. And Faye, here's a microphone. If you'd like to just give them a few words about that.
What happened to my drum roll? I wanted a drum roll. You're welcome to come this afternoon. I'm going to talk about ways of peaceful dying. Unless you're immortal, and then don't bother to show up. Unless you have friends that are not immortal, and then you should show up. And I hope to tell you things you may not know about, but should. So that's it.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, Faye, well, we're really glad to have you with us this morning. That will be in the library right across the courtyard there, right after the service. And there will be a light lunch served as well. So I know death and dying can be a complicated topic to talk about, but I know Faye does it in a way that's very engaging. So I encourage you to attend that and be involved. Be involved in any way that you'd like to here at UUCF. So in that spirit of warmth and hospitality, I now invite you to find someone around you that you don't know very well and say hello. Spring is in the air, apparently. This morning, we continue in our sermon series that is lasting all of this church year, and it's we're exploring different voices in Unitarian Universalism, and we've explored Jewish voices and Christian voices, and this morning we will be exploring humanist voices. And I just want to also call your attention to the fact that we do have a library in the other building across the courtyard, and it has several books on humanism. Ed Chabron, where are you? Ed's back there. Ed is always happy to take you to the library, show you where those books on humanism or other topics that you might be interested are. So please take Ed up on that offer. There are announcement sheets on your chairs. All kinds of things are going on. You won't know about all of those things unless you read the announcements. So I encourage you to read those. There are also social action recaps on your chairs. And one of the reasons we did this was so that you could see all the things the congregation has been involved in over the past year or so. And you've really been involved in a lot. And this is also an invitation for you to look at that list and think about what else you might want to be involved in going forward. Well, anyway, a lot happening this morning, right? But let us begin our time of worship and community with our opening hymn.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Eleanor Nunez, and I'm your music director here at UUCF. For our opening hymn, In the Spirit of Humanism, we will be singing number 1028, The Fire of Commitment. And I need a huge favor from you guys. I have bronchitis, so I need you to sing very loud, because I cannot. So please, rise in mind, body, or spirit. Join us with some big, loud voices, and here we go. Our hunger.
Wow, she asked, and you guys really stepped up. That was amazing. Good job. Gave me goosebumps. Come One, Come All by Ian W. Riddle. Come one, come all. Come with your missing pieces and your extra screws. Come with your hard edges and your soft spots. Come with your bowed heads and upright spines. Come all your flamboyant and drab, verbose and quiet, fidgeting and lethargic. All you with large vision and tender hearts. All you with small courage and tender fears. Bring your lisp and your stutter and your song. Bring your gavel and your drawl and your lip. Bring your anger and your joy and your righteous indignation, misfits and conformists and everyone in between. Come into this space and be welcome. Bring who you are. Bring where you've traveled. Bring what you long for and let us worship together. I'd like to invite Charlotte and Noah to come up, and Noah's going to display his fresh, super clean haircut today. I now invite you to join with me in saying the words on the screen. This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment.
Love is the document that we share. The quest of truth is our sacrament, and service is our prayer. To dwell together in peace, to see knowledge and freedom, to serve human need, thus to be covenant with one another.
And I will now invite Debbie and Christina to come forward. We are going to have a couple of brief reflections, and one of the reasons we're doing that in this service on humanism is because part of being human is being involved with other humans, caring for one another in the world. So Debbie and Christina have some reflections on some ways that we can do that in a really concrete way.
Thank you. I think most of us believe it's wrong to separate kids from their families, those who are seeking asylum. And we all want to do something that we can to relieve their burden. Children coming to our border seeking refuge has been going on for years. Children from Central America, Rohingya youth, and others who have faced tragic situations in their countries of origin. For the past several years, members from UUCF have been volunteering at Crittenden with their unaccompanied children. Their program is here in Fullerton. I found it to be a tremendously rewarding experience. And when I think back on all of the time that I've spent with these kids, no matter what the activity, it makes me reflect on the qualities I see in them that we all value. First, I see resilience in these kids who've been through so much but have remained strong in spirit and determined to go on with their lives, making the most of it. They come with a quality of persistence, focus, and concentration. One brief story was of a 17-year-old young man that I was working with, and I'd seen him over several months at Crittenden. And he told me goodbye in the most wonderful way possible. He said, "I'm not going to see you again. I'm going to go and see my mom. I haven't seen her since I was 4 years old." And he was going to take a plane the next day across the country to meet up with his mom. And I certainly hope that that reunion was a happy and a successful one for everyone involved. Every month, members of our congregation have been bringing some activity to share with the unaccompanied children. Regardless of the activity we bring, their attention, concentration, creativity, and enthusiasm is remarkable. I also see that they care for each other, as how would they have made this arduous journey had they not been caring for each other along the way? The older boy helping the younger boy, or helping someone who's new to the program, or helping someone who doesn't yet speak the language. I'd like to invite you to join us in this wonderful opportunity. There's going to be information about how to volunteer at the social action table and how you can get involved. I'd like to tell you briefly about Crittenden, as they've asked me to share this information with you. It's considered one of the network of shelters contracted with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and a grantee under the Office of Refugee Resettlement. The youth shelter program opened 12 years ago to assist Office of Refugee Resettlement with providing short-term medical, educational, recreational, mental health, and housing services for unaccompanied youth. The idea of youth shelters came about as the federal government responded to the Flores Settlement Agreement. This litigation outcome set into motion the national standards of how the federal government needs to treat children in the immigration custody, and that the children must be held in the least restrictive environment appropriate to age and special needs. The least restrictive environment component of the Flores Settlement Agreement is the reason why Crittenden, a trauma-informed child welfare agency, was selected to be a youth shelter by Health and Human Services. They have served unaccompanied youth during the Bush administration, the Obama administration, and currently. And again, I invite you to become involved in this wonderful opportunity. And I'm going to invite Christina and Randy Hetrick, if she would like, to come and share a brief story about their experiences.
Well, I guess part of the quest for truth is to go out and try to find out what's really happening. Don't just listen to media that's talking to you all the time. So I got involved back in the way early stages of this when kids that are coming north are actually 12 to 17-year-old boys that are true unaccompanied minors. They've taken their lives in their hands, and they're up here in a youth shelter. We can be proud of the human rights quality of the shelters that we sponsor locally. Two things that are heartwarming. I came in first, as you're not going to believe it, but if you know that I'm related to P.T. Barnum, we have what we call social circus work movement. I'm not kidding. So I went in as a social circus worker, and I teach kids juggling. And I enjoy the shouts of joy that the kids have as they learn how to juggle. And one kid came up to me afterwards very excited and said, "You know what? I had a dream about this. I dreamed this was going to happen." Another thing that I did at Christmas time was to go in with music on the accordion. We sang Christmas carols. And one of the young people was sitting next to me listening. I said, "We know they're having a snack right now. Why don't you go?" He said, no, I don't need the food." He said, "La música me alimenta." It's the food, the music that's nourishing me right now. So your gifts, mine are rather strange, but yours might be better. So come on in and share them if you would like.
This month's food challenge is pancake mix, and next month is canned soup. Each Sunday, our children collect food donations to provide food for those in need. We invite the children to sit up front for the Time of All Ages presentation before going to their educational classes.
Everyone, my name is Rachel White, and I'm the Director of Religious Education here at UUCF. And as we talk about humanist voices in Unitarian Universalism, we reflect on the first principle, which is the inherent worth and dignity of every person, or in our children's version, each person is important. And we're about to watch the story called I Am Jazz, which is the story of a transgender child based on the real life experiences of Jazz Jennings, who has been a spokesperson, who has become a spokesperson for trans kids everywhere.
Hello, this is Jazz Jennings, and I am going to do a reading of my book, I Am Jazz. I am Jazz. For as long as I can remember, my favorite color has been pink. My second favorite color is silver, and my third favorite color is green. Here are some of my other favorite things: dancing, singing, backflips, drawing, soccer, swimming, makeup, and pretending I'm a pop star. Most of all, I love mermaids. Sometimes I even wear a mermaid tail in the pool. My best friends are Samantha and Casey. We always have fun together. We like high heels and princess gowns, or cartwheels and trampolines. But I'm not exactly like Samantha and Casey. I have a girl brain, but a boy body. This is called transgender. I was born this way. Or cartwheels and trampolines. But I'm not exactly like Samantha and Casey. I have a girl brain, but a boy body. This is called transgender. I was born this way. When I was very little, and my mom would say, "You're such a good boy," I would say, "No, mama, good girl." At first, my family was confused. They'd always thought of me as a boy. As I got a little older, I hardly ever played with trucks or tools or superheroes, only princesses and mermaid costumes. My brothers told me this was girl stuff. I kept right on playing. My sister says I was always talking to her about my girl thoughts and my girl dreams and how one day I would be a beautiful lady. She would giggle and say, "You're a funny kid." Sometimes my parents let me wear my sister's dresses around the house, but whenever we went out, I had to put on my boy clothes again. This made me mad. Still, I never gave up trying to convince them. Pretending I was a boy felt like telling a lie. Then, one amazing day, everything changed. Mom and Dad took me to meet a new doctor who asked me lots and lots of questions. Afterward, the doctor spoke to my parents and I heard the word transgender for the very first time. That night at bedtime, my parents both hugged me and said, "We understand now. Be who you are. We love you no matter what." This made me smile and smile and smile. Mom and Dad told me I could start wearing girl clothes to school and growing my hair long. They even let me change my name to Jazz. Being Jazz felt much more like being me. Mom said that being Jazz would make me different from the other kids at school, but that being different is okay. What's important, she said, is that I'm happy with who I am. Being Jazz caused some other people to be confused too, like the teachers at school. At the beginning of the year, they wanted me to use the boys' bathroom and play on the boys' team in gym class, but that didn't feel normal to me at all. I was so happy when the teachers changed their minds. I can't imagine not playing on the same team as Casey and Samantha. Even today, there are kids who tease me, or call me by a boy name, or ignore me altogether. This makes me feel crummy. Then, I remember that the kids who get to know me usually want to be my friend. They say I'm one of the nicest girls at school. I don't mind being different. Different is special. I think what matters most is what a person is like inside. And inside, I am happy. I am having fun. I am proud. I am Jazz. So, always love yourself and always spread that love to the world around you because you are beautiful no matter what.
I will invite our worship associate to light a candle now. I light a candle for
the violent acts we see in the world. I know there's been another shooting this week, and yet there are so many things that are happening in the world that a candle is just a small act of recognition. It reminds us that we keep the flame alive in the work that we do to combat the violence that we see out in the world. And I'd like to begin our time of joys and sorrows by asking you to come forward if you have a brief personal joy or sorrow, something that is too joyful to hold by yourself or too sorrowful to hold alone. I'd like you to come forward and share that if you care to.
As many of you know, my husband Jerry had a brain bleed, a subdural hematoma, almost 2 weeks ago, and he's been in the hospital a week and home a few days now, and he's doing great. Thank you all for your prayers and your cards and your best wishes. I really appreciate you. It's so wonderful. I feel so blessed to be part of this community. Thank you.
As I shared last week, the Sunshine Singers went to the home of, well, where Dick and Marlene Cole are living with Marlene's relatives now. They're in Corona, and they were so happy to have us sing. And I want you to know that this group is open to all of you. So if you would like to join us and sing, we're going to sing at Jean Preble's home on February the 10th. After the service.
As we know, the joys and sorrows that are spoken on Sunday morning, that just scratches the surface of what might be happening in our lives. And that the true way we build community is a time after the service where we engage with one another, we check in, we find out how people are doing. And also that we go through the world treating each other gently. Certainly in these times, I think that is a requirement, not an option. As we start to move into our time of meditation and reflection, I'd like to share with you this poem from Alice Walker. Love is not concerned with whom you pray or where you slept that night you ran away. Love is concerned that the beating of your heart should kill no one. I think I'm going to move up here. Would you join me in the spirit of prayer, meditation, and reflection? What is love concerned with? Love is concerned that we treat each other gently. Love recognizes what can be done in this world, the atrocities, the violence, especially on a day like today, International Holocaust Remembrance Day, a reminder of what humanity can do at its worst. And indeed, we don't have to look very far most days to see what humanity can do at its worst. There is evidence all around us, in the news, on our computer screens, our televisions, our phones. Bad news is always available. But this morning we also celebrate what humanity can do at its best. When humanity concerns itself with love, what can it do? Sometimes I marvel at what we human beings can do. Sometimes it's the small things. the little victories, the hugs, the hellos, the kind words. And sometimes it's the big things. The people who are out there fighting against injustice in significant ways that affect all of us for the better. What is love concerned with? I invite you now into a moment of silence to consider love, to consider humanity, and to consider your own heart. Being human isn't easy. For as much as we reach to be together, we so often feel alone, caught in silence. And there is a silence between a comfortable silence of being alone with oneself and the silence of being disconnected. And between those two kinds of silences, we are called to build a bridge.
Darkness, my old friend, I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned the collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by a flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more, people talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share, and no one dare disturb the sound of silence. Fools say, I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words like silence and echoes.
of silence. And the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign flashed out its, and the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls and tenement halls, whispered in the sound of silence.
This reading is by Kendall Givens and William Murray. Humanists agree on many things, but humanism includes a variety of aspects, and it means different things to different people. Depending on which aspect particular humanist chooses to emphasize, amid this diversity, humanism is not primarily about denying the existence of the supernatural, but about affirming positive values, especially the worth and dignity of every human being, the centrality of social justice, and the importance of community. Humanism leads to a way of living that is morally responsible, meaningful, and joyful, and seeks to make the world a better place. The humanist does not find evidence of goodness at the heart of creation. We humanists believe the universe is indifferent to human life, and we have no experience of being loved beyond measure by a goodness at the heart of things. But we do believe that human beings are of great worth and dignity, and that we are capable of loving and doing good, and that we make our lives meaningful and the world a better place. This is religious humanism, but there is also secular humanism. The two philosophies share the same basic convictions, but religious humanists emphasize the importance of coming together as a community of people with similar beliefs and values, whereas secular humanists do not, generally. For this reason, some refer to religious humanism as congregational humanism because of their concern that the world religious connotes belief in the supernatural. Religious humanists also value sharing feelings and emotions more than secular humanists do. As the percentage of the population that claims no religious identity increases, the enduring message of community, of intellectual integrity, evolving conscious creative endeavor, and celebration of human life and human connection.
One Sunday morning a few years ago, when I served another church, it was a pretty typical Sunday morning for that church. Crowd of regulars gathered alongside a few visitors. Service proceeded as usual. I preached a basic message of Unitarian Universalism and its good news, love and acceptance, inclusion and social justice. Afterwards, a young man cautiously approached me. "I'm Mexican," he said tentatively. I come straight from Mexico," he added, almost defiantly this time. He waited for my response. "Welcome," I said. "Most of my people don't leave the neighborhood we live in," he said. "But I like to get out once in a while and come somewhere like this," he said, gesturing to the mostly white crowd of congregants. "You can't just stay with the same people all the time, you know?" I nodded. "There are all kinds of human beings out there in the world," I said, "but we Unitarian Universalists, well, we haven't always been the best at figuring out how to make all of them feel welcome." I was referring, of course, to our historically white and well-educated roots that sometimes threaten to wall us in. A little more comfortable, I think, after my frank observation about Unitarian Universalism's struggle for inclusivity, this young Mexican man confided, "I was nervous about coming here this morning. I'm glad you took the chance, I said. It's funny, he said. I really liked what you had to say up there. And it was funny because it was you saying it. You know, you with the face of the oppressor. He stopped, worried he might have said the wrong thing. You know, I never thought about myself as having the face of the oppressor before, but I got it in that moment. I'm white, blonde, blue-eyed, male. If I'm not the historic face of the oppressor, then I don't know who is. We exchanged a few more words after that, and then he went off saying he'd be back the next week. I never saw him again. Being human is hard. Our moral conscience, our ability to discern right from wrong, our complex emotions like hate and remorse. There isn't a comprehensive roadmap, at least any that I found, for any of this. We individually and collectively make it up as we go. And living in a world where injustice flourishes, where inequality so often reigns, that makes being human even harder. I am in this body always going to represent the oppressor for someone else. And the truth is that there are people who represent the oppressor for me. People I have to take a deep spiritual breath before I even consider engaging with them or their ideas. I see one of them all too frequently on my TV and computer screen. Being human is hard. The concept of humanism embraces the challenge of being human as the central focus of our lives. So rather than centralizing the purpose of human existence as a relationship with the supernatural, humanism centers on the importance of humanity's relationship with itself. We are the ones who create most of our problems, and we are the ones who have to solve them. Interestingly enough, while humanism is often mistakenly conflated with atheism, there has been room in many of the key humanist thinkers for a theistic point of view. The test for humanism is not whether one believes in God or not, but whether one puts the responsibility on humanity to create its own earthly salvation. So in the spirit of our continuing series this year of Unitarian Universalist voices from different people with different theological perspectives, I share with you David Breeden, a UU humanist who writes of a personal journey that I suspect some of us in this room can relate to. David says, I grew up with revivals and singings. I saw people slayed in the spirit, dancing in the spirit, and speaking in tongues. I've seen the effects of the Holy Ghost descending upon a congregation. I've seen exorcisms. I've seen the laying on of hands and healing. I began to see, however, that when I read what I read in the Bible did not square with what I heard from the preachers. Wasn't it there in black and white that Jesus wanted deep political change? Radical love? I thought so. I got no satisfactory answers to my questions, David says. And so I stopped going to church the minute I left home, which was right after high school graduation. I went to community college, then the local university. One day, my American literature professor, a Harvard-trained man named Wallace Stevens, said, I'm an atheist, of course, but the Unitarians will be kind enough to bury me. Breeden was so intrigued by these Unitarians who would gladly bury an atheist that he visited his local Unitarian Universalist congregation and never looked back. His story of his early life may resonate with many of you. The idea of questioning the religious narratives that you grew up with. And I know there can be a certain sadness, a certain bitterness even, when a person realizes that what they've been taught doesn't withstand critical analysis. Thus, frequently, the journey to humanism has often been eclipsed by the journey from an oppressive religious system, a journey from rather than to. For instance, a few years ago, I had the privilege of taking a class on African American humanism from, I think, the foremost thinker on the topic, Anthony Pinn. Anthony is a Unitarian Universalist who's published many books on this subject. And I was excited to delve into the book assigned for the class, one of his books, A History of African American Humanism Here in the United States. And considering how strong the Black Church has been in African American culture here, I was curious to understand those whose theological framework existed outside that system. So as I read the book, I was dismayed to see that example after example seemed to be about slaves and other oppressed African Americans first putting their faith in God, being disillusioned by the lack of change in their lives, and then deciding that nothing but human action could create change. Now, it wasn't that I disagreed with their conclusion. It was that it just seemed so reactionary. Could a humanistic viewpoint only be born out of disillusionment and anger? So I asked Dr. Pinn that question, rather naively, I imagine, as a first-year student. And he looked at me for a long time and then said something like, "Well, when people have few choices, little agency, they don't have space to make more creative, affirmative choices to make meaning of their lives. They are working to survive." In other words, being human is hard. I've never forgotten that. And I think that's why so many stories of coming to humanism and Unitarian Universalism, which has humanism ingrained in our basic understanding of the world, I think that's why there's so much in common there. So many of those stories of coming to a humanistic viewpoint are ones of people coming out of oppressive circumstances, oppressive religious communities or religion-tainted social systems where discrimination based on race, gender, or sexual orientation thrive. It can be difficult sometimes for people who have found liberal religious communities to find words to talk about what they believe. It's so much easier to talk about what we don't believe. Amanda Pape, who grew up as a humanist Unitarian Universalist, talks about what she sees as the myth of theism versus humanism. While teaching a world religions class, she says, "I managed to teach not just the students, but myself, that humanism was much broader, much bigger than the box I tried to put it in my youth. Far from being the end of the seesaw, the polar opposite of theism, humanism was really an attitude about life, about the human experience. Humanism, I came to realize, is primarily about who we are connected to, what we think about each other, and how we work for justice in the world." So this morning, we watched a video of Jazz Jennings, and I felt it was really important that you see her read her story of being transgender. We watched that as a reminder that humanism and Unitarian Universalism constantly calls us to lift up the worth and dignity of every human being, especially those who are marginalized. So too have we heard the voice of Alice Walker during our meditation this morning, again, to lift up the voice of a Black woman, someone who has so often been marginalized. It's why we've taken time to talk about Crittenden Children and Family Services, to lift up the needs of children and families who are so often marginalized because of income and life circumstances. As someone who admittedly has the face of the oppressor, I'm particularly conscious that part of my work in the world is to try to create deeper understanding about what it means to be human across our differences. Likewise, I believe that every aspect of what it means to be Unitarian Universalist is rooted in a form of humanism, and I see no reason why that can't live comfortably alongside those who take a more mystical or theistic approach to their faith. The real threats to the principles of democracy and freedom are the people, however they identify, who don't see the value of this world we live in now, as it is now. Something humanism calls us to do. It's those Jews, Christians, Buddhists, etc., who live their lives with a humanistic philosophy alongside or ingrained into their religious philosophies. Those are the folks who are out making this world a better place. They're the ones who are building meaningful relationships across differences, helping others when they can. I mean, to read the stories of Jesus and not see his humanism at play is to miss much of the Christian scriptures. And same for much of the more contemporarily applicable content of the Quran and other sacred texts. Humanism lives in theistic religions, if one is open to looking for it, just as it certainly does in atheistic perspectives, because at its core, humanism is grounded in love of humanity. And that's a central component of all religions, going right back to the beginning. Another humanist, UU, Ginger Lukes, speaks to this grounding love when she says, "Being a humanist calls me to my better self. And my humanism is shaped by love. Participating in a religious community makes my humanism whole because I don't exist in the world as a lone entity. Being a humanist is a religious act for me." Patricia Moore seconds the notion of the importance of religious community for humanism to thrive. "Though it may seem strange coming from an agnostic," she says, "I believe humanism needs religion for its future just as much as Unitarian Universalism needs humanism. Whether we consider community spiritual or not, almost all humans need a caring community for friendship, comfort, and support across the years." Meanwhile, we don't all agree. Are you surprised? UU Maria Green makes a case for non-religious humanism, preferring not to redefine the term religious to include her decidedly non-supernatural views. "It's the right," Green says, "of every Unitarian Universalist to self-identify however they would like and have their perspective listened to and respected." And I agree. I mean, at the end of the day, being an inclusive community means that we learn how to sit beside each other on Sunday morning, knowing there are differences in language and understanding, but that certain primarily humanistic characteristics hold us together as a community. The belief that we can do more together than alone, that humanity is accountable to one another, and that human beings have the power to effect positive transformation. These are the humanistic characteristics that bind Unitarian Universalists together. But they are not all that we are. On top of these foundational ideas, we have people who identify in other ways, as we've been exploring in this series of sermons this year. Having heard about Jews and Christians, we'll hear about Hindus and Buddhists. Humanism is at our core as Unitarian Universalists, but it's not all that we are. There are other markers and identifiers claimed by the people among us. And this all just comes full circle back around to say that being human is hard. It's hard when we all have different ways of looking at the world, of making meaning. It's hard when we like to think of ourselves as good people, but recognize that for someone else, we have the face of the oppressor. It's hard that despite our wish to build bridges across differences, the gulf between we human beings is often wide. And let's face it, I mean, it's hard to find reasons to keep hoping, to move forward. We're no strangers to struggle. Just this week, we've seen the Supreme Court allow the president's restrictions on transgender people serving in the military to go into effect, while the legal battle continues in lower courts. Did you even catch that in the news? There's so much, it's sometimes hard to even filter out what's happening. Of course, we've seen another turn in the saga of the government shutdown, maybe for the better, but I don't know. It's hard anymore to know. We've heard more of the continuing opportunistic rhetoric from the incident involving the Native American man and the teenage boy at the Lincoln Memorial. Lots of different folks are using that for their own ends. The events in our world today, another shooting, challenge us to have abiding faith in humanity. But one of the things I like about humanism is that it doesn't ask us to be uncritical in our consideration of the actions of human beings. It asks humanity to be its best self, to work harder, to be better, to love each other. And as Alice Walker said, love is concerned that the beating of your heart should kill no one. So being human is hard, but it's not impossible. And when it's met with gratitude, when its potential is lifted up by the collective gathering of people in community, like this one, when its possibilities are embraced with joy and creativity, then being human can be close to being divine, if there is such a thing at all. Being human is hard, but it's possible.
Our offering is a vital way we show our gratitude for this community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world, and we thank you for your generosity.